Here we are, Rock to Recovery Radio, episode fill in the blank with any number you feel like. We don't know. Maybe we don't want to know. I am your host, Wesley Gear, or Wes Gear, I think I usually say. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. We are on Laguna's only FM, KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only, wait, no, I'm supposed to say human crafted radio. And this radio show is also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have a bunch of amazing treatment programs for a variety of ailments, diagnoses, mental health, addiction, etc. They partnered with us early on, so thanks to those two entities for being with us. And then, I think the next thing I'd like to say is, why are we here? Well, I'm a sober dude. Somehow, I am not dead. That is a miracle in and of itself. And the idea of the show is to bring light to the horrible disease of addiction, to the struggles of PTSD, TBI, wounded warriors, mental health issues. There's so many people out there struggling with this stuff. There's so many people out there dying all the time. And when you're in those spots, you feel very alone. And we want to help people out there listening know they're not alone, know there are answers. And for people who are actively in recovery, they can use this show as a support. We just want to help people. We want to help people recover. But what we do here on Rock to Recovery Radio is we interview people, a lot of rock stars, musicians, you know, some celebs, actors, models, rad humans, exceptional earthlings, stuff like that. But there's been a lot of dudes on the show. And tonight, one of my favorite women, close, you know, mom's number one. She's right up there. You know, if it was a MySpace page, she'd definitely be probably in my top 20, I'm thinking, on the MySpace page. Hey. But yeah, what we do each week is interview people who've struggled with some sort of battle, usually addiction or mental health or whatever, and they've not just survived, but overcome their ailments to thrive and get into what I like to call the vortex of radness. You know, because a lot of people, when they start down this road of recovery, they think, oh, no more drinking, life's going to suck, or no more this, life's going to suck, or how will I ever get over this, or whatever. So I think a lot of people, when they come into it, they think that life just isn't going to be that good anymore, or it'll be some muted version of life. And the people I like to have on the show are people who have just crushed it, but through some sort of program of recovery, found a way to thrive and become, most times, a better version of themselves than they've ever come, to live a life better than they've ever imagined. So this show's guest is no different. She's an amazing beacon of love and light and energy and creativity. And as soon as I met her, we just hit it right off. Is it fair to say you're a yogi?
I'm totally a yogi. Actually, yogini is the female version of a yogi, a yogini.
See, I didn't know that.
Yep.
So I didn't know that. She is a yogini. I bet most of you at home didn't know that.
Doesn't that sound like a really delicious Italian dish?
I was going to say, it sounds Italian, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a yogini.
Would you like to try the yogini?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So she's a yogini, but
lots
I do.
Lots of garlic.
Lots of garlic?
Lots of garlic.
Oh, I was thinking dessert, but that, I'm always thinking about dessert. But you did some, you know, you did some modeling. I think you were in some commercials back in the day. Right.
Yeah, I was in some commercials. I did a show called Deal or No Deal. I was one of the little briefcase models for a while.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did. It's kind of a funny little niche. I did a ton of Halloween costume modeling.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah, totally. I'll still see them once in a while, and it's never like this super like really nice Halloween costumes. It's always the ones in a plastic bag, and it'll have like my picture on the front of it.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. Now I want to know, like, were you Cheshire Cat or, you know, because it would have been like an older one. Yeah.
Like an old timey one, because I'm super old. Yeah.
You have to let us know. Yeah. So I haven't even officially.
Like an old timey, like, yeah.
Yeah. Imagine. Like some old movie. Like you're Sandra Bullock from 24. No, Speed.
actually is my era. So yeah, no, I don't know. The thing that picked in, that like popped into my mind was like a really creepy old timey Minnie Mouse. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah.
Where she has like the long ears and the way too small eyes.
When they had like racist stuff in Mickey Mouse, as they used to. Anyhow, so my guest is Lindsay Christensen, S-E-N.
Uh-huh.
And you could go check her out on Instagram. Definitely, I could qualify you as an Instagram model, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's so funny, for a while, like at the beginning, I kind of struggled with that name. But right. I've been in the modeling business for so long that I realized like what a cool turn it's taken since the advent of social media and how much, you know, power that's given back to the individual instead of, you know, the agency or whatever. So, yes, proud Instagram model.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see like you could a person could be like, oh, anybody can be an Instagram model. But you have you have a lot of really active followers on there. I mean, they're on our 1,900 different live feeds we have going right now. They're probably all pissed that I'm talking to you. You know how guides that get all into chicks on the interweb, they're like, who's this jerk on the radio talking to Maya Lindsay? I've been following her for 6 years. Punk.
No.
Look at him. He's such an idiot. No.
No. I have a lot of really awesome people I've connected with online.
Yeah.
So
and you've been bringing some spirituality to your posts.
Totally.
But we'll get into that. Okay.
Okay.
So here's how we start the show. Well, that was a start 7 minutes later. And by the way, thanks for everybody that's tuning in and on the various live feeds we have going. And what you don't know is we have White Chocolate in the studio.
Right.
Yes. But we can't tell you about him. Hi, White Chocolate. He's here. He's supporting. Yeah.
Some
people know White Chocolate. Some people wish they knew him.
You know what's funny about that? My I have hair extensions, and the color is called White Chocolate. So I buy these boxes of White Chocolate hair.
I think
I know. It's divine intervention. It's something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Synchronicity.
So let's get into the story. Okay. Now, I do a little bit of research, but I don't like to do too much because I want to discover with the audience. So people, their stories can start in different spots, right? We always talk about this. Somebody could have a horrible childhood and not be an alcoholic or drug addict. Somebody could have a great childhood and be one. So it's not necessarily what happens to you as a kid. Where would you start your story for you?
Like way later than most people,
right.
Which was for a long time like really confusing for me because 25.
Dang.
I know, super late, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was really confusing to me for a long time because it is, I guess, kind of an atypical story.
Yeah.
But I had a great childhood. And really looking back, like, you know, I'd smoke pot in high school and I'd drink a little bit here and there. But I used and drank really, really normally for a confusingly long time that kind of tricked me into a false confidence about the whole thing. Because I knew I had, like, the ism in my family. Mm. My grandma, my uncle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, died from this disease. So I was really, you know, I was nervous about it. I was always told to be nervous about it. But it started really late for me.
That's interesting. And, you know, there is literature that we won't mention by name that talks about how women can come into it late and go through the progressions of the, quote, disease much quicker than men.
Yeah, I believe that.
To suggest that,
I was a late bloomer.
So you smoked a little weed. When did you first do it?
High school.
High school.
Yeah, junior year. Yeah, exactly.
But it didn't take over your life. You didn't go, oh, my God, I've found the answer to my whole existence. Yeah.
No. I didn't really like it all that well. And, you know, I'd drink and all that in college and graduated with honors in 3.5 years, did really well. And I mean, looking back, I really don't know that. Well, I'll put it this way. I was an alcoholic because I think that, you know, I see signs of that throughout my life, but I didn't drink or use.
You said you were or were not back then. You wasn't? Is that what you said?
I wasn't. I don't know.
I wasn't? Did you say
wasn't? No. I think I've been an alcoholic since the day I was born.
So
I really do, but I don't think I used or drank problematically until I was 25.
Well, they talk about it being a progressive disease, right? And I think there are people out there that could, like, I think there's a spot where I almost jumped off and maybe would have been okay as just like a heavy, heavy weekend drinker.
Mm-hmm.
But then I found meth and got in a band so I could cultivate my ism, my alcoholism.
Yeah.
So you say you feel like you're an alcoholic from a young age. So did you have feelings or, you know, did you not fit in or were you anxious? Okay.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, when I ask where the story starts, that's where I would go.
Okay.
So I get what your answer was. When did you when did the story start with using?
Mm.
But when we talk about addiction a lot, we talk about the drugs or the alcohol or even the sex abuse or sex addiction, I should say, or gambling, whatever, are manifestations to a deeper problem, right?
Yeah.
Some people just get addicted to opiates, they quit, they're fine, right?
Totally.
But a lot of us are self-medicating.
Yeah.
So when did you notice that, like, man, you know, I feel like people don't like me, or I'm so uncomfortable.
Yeah. I remember that feeling in kindergarten just being, I was never at home in my own skin.
Now that is a common theme.
Yeah, right. And I've heard that over and over in 12-step meetings.
Yeah.
And it really resonates with me because, God, I thought I was the only one.
Mm. Yeah. And that's really self-aware to know that in kindergarten. You know,
yeah.
Were you like?
Well, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think at that time I would have put it into those words.
Right.
But that was that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. What were some manifestations of that feeling? Were you a loner? Did you?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. A lot of issues with anxiety.
Social anxiety.
Yep. Other manifestations of anxiety. You know, I was just always kind of a high-strung kid. Yeah, but, you know, like when you say like a loner, I wasn't exactly a loner, but I never felt really like a part of either, if you know what I mean. Like, so I had a lot of friends. I was always really social, but I really did feel alone.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Even with friends.
Even amongst a lot of people, yeah, I felt really alone.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But did it feel like, I had it where it just felt hard to connect. Like, what do I got to do to get people to like me?
Totally.
Right?
Yes.
Which
yes.
is assuming they didn't like me, which they may have.
Which I was always trying to figure out what you wanted and then to be that person. And so that's exhausting, right? Because I'm always changing for who I'm with, and I've got all these different hats I'm trying to wear. And then at the end of the day, like maybe I've quote unquote made that connection with somebody and that like they like me. But then I never feel the benefits of that connection because
that's a great
it wasn't
point.
With the real me.
I get, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you do get somebody like you and your friends really receiving their love or their friendship, that's hard. Yeah. Now, so does this have something to do with your parents? Were your parents together?
My parents are awesome.
They're still together?
Still together. Picture perfect childhood.
Interesting.
Yeah. The only thing, you know, it runs in my family. And I really do believe like so much of this is you're born with it.
Right.
I really do, you know?
Yeah.
Because my childhood really could not have been more perfect.
Right, except for how you felt.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't great for you, but I like that we're sharing that to show this to people who are listening out there.
Yeah.
We can have a good family feel like, what is wrong with me?
Well, and I know that's something like, you know, you always go back and wonder when a family member is dealing with something like, well, did we do something, or, you know, how could we have saved them from this?
And
it's really nothing, you know,
it's a destiny in a sense, genetic disposition.
Yeah, I do.
So, you know, referencing your life now, you're obviously an extremely attractive woman who,
thank you.
Yes. Who uses sexuality in marketing yourself, right? Yeah. Wouldn't you say, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or the human form?
A big time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's where you're at now.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it was like for you when you're a kid, and or when you were younger, and I feel sorry for what women have to go through. I've seen the video of, like, the woman who's, let's say, average looking, not a supermodel, and walking down New York, and every dude's like, yo, dude, you know, calling her, and, you know. So I feel like that could screw anybody up. But what I'm getting at, were you a cute younger girl? Were you like guys trying to date you in high school? What was that life like?
I was like really like awkward until the summer before high school. And then I grew up like 4 years really, really, really fast. And I looked a lot older.
Right.
And
you looked womanly.
I did.
And so your guys were, you know, coming your way.
Yeah.
Lots of dates. How did that make you feel?
Good, powerful.
Okay, so you went from like, hey, I can't fit in, to all of a sudden.
Yeah, power from that, absolutely.
So did that change your trajectory? Because you're in high school, and then what did you end up doing? You got into modeling. I heard that you were hanging out at the Playboy Mansion and stuff like that.
I did, yeah. So
how'd you go from this attractive woman in high school to what came next? Like,
yeah, so went to college, graduated, got a great degree, moved out.
In what?
In psychology.
Wow, I didn't know that.
BA in psychology.
BA in psychology.
Yeah. Graduated summa cum laude. Had like big dreams for myself. You know, I was going to get the master's. I was going to get the doctorate. I was going to do really, really well. I was going to do all these big things. And I was going to make that happen. And
You're going to use your brains.
I was going to use my brains, yeah. And after I got out of college, I moved to LA. And I had stars in my eyes.
Oh, you came from Des Moines.
I went to school in Boulder, Colorado.
Got you.
And then from Boulder, I kind of just on a whim drove out to LA one day and was like, I'm going to live in LA. I just, you know, I want to experience that. I want to go to the big city. I want to have this.
Was that because you're like, I'm a hot chick. LA is where it's at.
I just wanted to have this really big, exciting life, you know.
Gotcha. What was big? Well, okay, define big and exciting.
Dude, LA, like the party scene, being where all the action was happening. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gotcha. I grew up in this sleepy little town, kind of a sweet but boring little place. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, suburb of Des Moines. And I'd always dreamed about like living in the big city.
Yeah. Yeah. Which a lot of people do.
Totally.
So you get to LA.
Yeah.
And then who'd you connect with? How'd you get into the the TV show and the Hefner and how did that happen?
Pretty slowly, actually. I got out there and, you know, you get an agent. And I think I kind of had this idea that, like, you either make it and make it big or you don't make it at all. And I was actually, like...
Gotcha. I can relate to that.
Yeah, I was kind of, like, in the middle. I was, like, mm-hmm. a middle class...
Making some money.
Yeah, I made enough to get by. You know, certainly wasn't rich. Certainly wasn't, like, a household name.
Early 20s?
Yeah. But it was, like, a working model and...
Just
was
a little
lot of fun.
Weed. Little weed, little booze.
Yeah, not
probably
even
some cocaine now.
Oh yeah, that was the jam. Hell yeah.
We laugh. Recovering people are funny.
But
we
that's
laugh.
What you do. I don't know.
Yeah. Right, everybody's cocaine. I'm in LA. Duh.
Totally. It was totally socially acceptable and okay and glamorous. And like, I actually really never liked cocaine. I just did it.
That
a
is
lot.
My story. No, totally.
I always say I like never liked cocaine. I just liked the way it smelled. And I was always just gonna do like one little.
Cocaine's like potato chips, right? Let me just have one of these potato chips. Next thing you know,
never.
The whole bag's gone.
God.
In either instance.
Best of intentions, you know.
I got in trouble with my parents for cocaine. One of my buddies did it all the time, so by default I was doing it, but I didn't have a problem with it because I really didn't like it.
My
buddy came over in the morning in his pickup truck and had the mirror from the night before, so I just like, I'll just put some in my gums. Like, I'm not. And then my parents saw that and they're like, oh my God, Wes is doing cocaine before high school. I'm like, really? I don't like it. I swear. They didn't get it. But anyhow, it was a sign of things to come.
Yeah.
But anyhow, this is an interview about you.
Yeah, this is hilarious.
Yeah. We're just sharing stories here. So tell me, I want to hear, when did you start getting a break and how was it progressing and when do you connect with Hefner? Because I feel like you can't go to Hefner's house without lots of sex and cocaine. I'm just going to say it.
Totally. And you're so wrong.
I
have no idea how wrong you are. And that was one of the biggest letdowns about like the whole thing was it was like I was this girl from Iowa and I was getting these invites to the Playboy Mansion and going to the parties and going to like the fun in the sun. Mm-hmm. And it was so boring.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
You know what?
Was he putting you to work?
He's an old guy who wanted to play dominoes and watch movies. And, like, everybody had to be...
I love you, Hefner, more now.
No. And everybody... Well, I think it used to be a really fun party place, and it's, mm-hmm. like, kept that reputation. But when I was there, it wasn't at all.
It was boring.
And all these girls would come over, and kind of to be on his good side, they'd put on these, like, little goody-two-shoes acts. And, you know, nobody would really drink or use very much, especially in front of him. And it was almost kind of discouraged to be wild. So... Anyway, we go to like, you know, you'd have like...
Was he a good role model? Like, would he bum out if girls were like, yo, Hef, I got a big eight ball. Let's go, homie. Would he be like...
He'd bum out, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They wouldn't be invited back.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So anyway...
So there's a lot of people hiding doing coke at the Playboy Mansion.
Totally. And those parties, like, people would, you know, you'd go in the early end, you'd cut out there at midnight, and then the after parties were where it was at. Because it was like, you got all pretty and you got all dressed up, but... You wanted to, like, really go let loose afterwards.
What does let loose mean, Lindsay? At Hugh Hefner's house in the after-hour parties?
Well, it was the after-hours were never at Hugh Hefner's house. But it usually involved, like, you know, nudity and alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for me, when I say let loose, like, it was just, I wanted to party how I wanted to party, which was
what?
Be able to drink a lot, be able to get to that point that I wanted to be at, the like happy, like kind of
pretty loaded.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like near blackout, but not quite.
Right.
There.
Just, okay.
You know,
so you had had some blackouts at this point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, how was your sexuality at this point?
You know, it's funny because I really like use my sexuality, and like, I'm a very like,
I mean, you had to,
I put it out there,
in
and you're
sense.
At the Playboy Mansion. Yeah. But I think it's funny because I'm way more sexually conservative than people would think that I would be. So really sexy. Don't mind being naked. Don't mind being nude. That's fine. I would grocery shop naked, but
if you could,
if I could, yeah.
Might be illegal.
It might be kind of cold. There's, you know, the whole,
yeah,
I feel like the whole thing's usually kind of cold. Maybe not grocery shop. Anyhow, I don't have any problems with nudity. I totally put, you know, my sexy out there, but I was always kind of like, I like to have that anchor of a boyfriend or
gotcha.
A husband.
So you would usually have a dude and be faithful. All
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
So when does it start getting crazy?
So, I mean, it was crazy all along. When I started like really going down the rabbit hole was when I discovered Xanax, benzodiazepines. And
what,
those
what,
were like, hell yeah.
This how is, old were you then?
You know, I think I had like taken them maybe before for like a wisdom tooth or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time, and I remember it. Like, I was laying by the pool at some fancy hotel, and some guy was like, hey, do you want a Zanny? And I took that with like a little champagne, and it was like that was where I wanted to be all along, and like all of a sudden I was there, and I was comfortable in my skin, and it was good.
Wow. So you noticed, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. We're gonna throw in, I'm gonna hear more about this. We're gonna throw in a song right now. Do you know what song you picked?
I know both of them. Well,
the
I'm
first one.
Giving the second one away, but the same band is the Eagles, my favorite band of all time.
And what's the first one we're playing?
Life in the Fast Lane.
Right, and this
is you.
So I'm Wes Gear. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. We're here with Lindsay Christensen. You could go check her out on Instagram, Lindsay Christensen SEN Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And this is Rock to Recovery Radio on KX93.5 FM, Life in the Fast Lane. We'll be right back.
Thank you. haven't seen a goddamn thing. He said, call the doctor, I think I'm gonna crash. The doctor say he's coming, but you gotta pay him cash. They went rushing down that freeway, mess around and got lost.
No more cussing. Okay, here we are. Whoa, I wasn't ready for that. Rock Recovery Radio, I'm your host, Wes Geer, and this is KX93.5 FM, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. And we're here with Lindsay Christensen, a beautiful friend of mine, Instagram model, was on game shows, TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I think you did a commercial, too, you told me about once, didn't you?
I've done some commercials,
some
yeah.
Some commercials.
Yeah,
yeah, oh, yeah. We got to dig those up.
Oh, they're hilarious.
Really? Like
yeah.
What ones?
Oh, God. Okay, so the best one I ever did, and I'll still pull this out. Like, you know, I'm sitting at dinner with friends. Like, I got to
yeah.
show you this
yeah, yeah.
I did. It was you know what Jimmy John's is?
Yeah.
You know, like
kind of
like a John's. Subway. Okay, yeah. So they have these really funny commercials, and the plot of this one was...
There's
a plot line. So the delivery guy's like so fast that he catches us in the middle of this weird, like, I guess implied sexual tryst between me, a midget, and a horse.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll just show you that one. It was like a man dressed as a horse. It wasn't an actual horse, so I don't know if that makes it any better.
I like to be at the advertising agency and they go, hey, Bob, I got an idea here. I have this girl and there's a horse and a... Anyhow.
Yeah,
I don't know how they got that one.
That sounds like a commercial that would air in like Eastern Germany or something.
Yeah, totally. Klaus, do you want some Jimmy John's? I'm busy, Gunther. Can't you see? Anyhow. All right, so we're with Lindsay Christensen, and she's a rad model, and she's a yoganini, which is not...
Yogini. That sounds like a sandwich. A yoganini.
That would be if you
might get a yoganini with like extra basil.
If you were like a cannibal and ate yogis in a panini, that's gross. Okay, so we're talking to you about your story.
Yeah.
You said you felt really uncomfortable as a kid.
Totally.
Kindergarten. And then started getting good looking in high school. You felt empowered by the attraction men. You know, the love men were giving you, or I should say love, the attention.
Attention, there you go, that's where we're brought,
And you felt empowered by that. And then you had the dreams of getting out of Des Moines.
Des Moines, yeah.
Des Moines.
Death Moan. But it's actually pretty cool. It's a pretty cool spot.
It's not bad.
No, it is.
And you went to college and got a BA in psychology.
Yep.
In Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, CU Boulder, yeah. University
so impressive. But you're like, you know what? Now I get the smart thing down. I'm going to Hollywood for glitz and glamour.
Yep.
Which led you to acting, modeling, Hugh Hefner's cocaine, beer, champagne, drinking. And you said early on it was okay.
Yeah.
High school, not a big problem. But then you were doing the cocaine. You really didn't even like it.
Nope.
By the way, for those just tuning in. Hugh Hefner would bum out if you came and had cocaine at the Playboy Mansion.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely not allowed.
I would have guessed, like, he's there with cocaine going, yeah, girl, sniff some of this. I'll talk to you in a few minutes.
That's what I thought. That's why I went to the party. I thought it was going to happen.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm Tracking your story. How old are you now? You're 25-ish?
Yes.
And then you're at the pool once.
Yeah.
A lot of people, we talk about like when they drink the first time or one of the first times, they have that, oh my God, that's the feeling I've been waiting for forever. But you didn't have it in high school when you're doing a little drinking and weed. But later, when life was going okay, you had it when you're at the pool and some dude gave you a Xanax, which you weren't like, I don't do Xanax. You're like, okay.
No, that sounded great.
Yeah. And you didn't know what it was.
No, I mean, I knew what it was, and I knew it was going to relax me, and I thought, that sounds good.
I'll relax a little bit. Yeah, I'll take
it. Sounds nice. I'm at the pool, sure.
Was it just one of the little football ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the yellow ones.
Yellow one. Okay.
Yeah. The mediums,
Ooh, okay. Gotcha. All right. And then you're drinking champagne, and then it hit you, and you were like, oh, man.
It was like the best day of my life. I was like, this is it. You know, I could just sit on this chair forever, and this would be good.
Yeah. And so where did it go from there? Did after that, were you like, I need some more of that. I got to take these all the time.
Totally. Yeah. So started like, it was kind of like started slow. Like, you know, you get it where you can, and like, and pills were a lot of times kind of available at parties. Like they were one of the things on the menu that was possible. So, you know, get the pills where I could, and then started, you know, having my own connections and getting it here and there from like dealers and, you know, people that I knew could hook it up.
Yeah. Did you go to doctors?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's that's a little bit later. So I kind of was like...
So first just seeking it kind of on the street.
Yeah, kind of getting my feet wet. And then kind of like around that time that I was getting pretty gnarly with it, I was married at the time, I got pregnant with my daughter.
How old?
So I was 28 when I got pregnant.
And you said you were a boyfriend guy. So this wasn't just some one night stand in the grotto.
No, this is my husband. No, we've been like trying for a while. I was like, we've been trying for like 3 years. And I was like, I don't know why I'm not getting pregnant. Like, this makes no sense to me.
You were definitely trying.
Yeah.
you're doing a lot of blow.
Well, I don't know. You know,
you guys were like Tony Montana in that.
Totally. We're just not living a healthy life, you know.
He was a partier too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did he kick up your party?
For sure.
Now, was it just you two together, or did he come in kind of hot and take you to a new level? Not that we're blaming him.
No, not at all. But all of a sudden, like, I got married. He lived
How old?
I was 24 when I got married.
And life's pretty good. You
have life's
success.
Pretty good.
And your husband's super successful.
Super successful.
What did he do?
He's done a lot of things. He's like an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like banking kind of stuff.
He's got some money.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of a sudden, I was down in Orange County, had, you know, all the toys, absolutely no responsibilities, didn't have to work, could kind of just hang by the pool all day. He was a partier, so it was kind of just like our weekend thing. You know, that's what we did. We'd throw these giant parties. We actually had a whole room in our house that was called the White Room, and it was all white, and it had like a table with like the mirror on it. It was a total party house.
And the White Room is not a coincidence that there's a lot of cocaine going on in that room.
No. It was like literally built for that purpose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did that register with you that like, wow, I married a guy and I'm trying to get pregnant, but we also have a room that is designated to cocaine.
It's Orange County, babe.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I get it. So you're like, so did you have a kids room designated yet?
No, not yet.
No. So let's just review what, because there's a saying in the literature that says our alcoholic life seemed the only normal one.
Yeah.
You can't differentiate the true from the false.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
When I got on meth, I felt like everybody was on meth. I was just delusional.
Yeah.
And I thought they should give it out at bars. Like, who's going to drive home drunk? Just give them some meth. They'll sober right up. And I'm serious. I'm not joking. So for you, you're like, honey, okay, let's keep trying to have this baby.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's no room designated for the baby, but you have a room designated for cocaine.
It's literal insanity.
Priorities.
Like when you say it that way, but at the time it made complete sense. You know, it was like, well, we're going to have fun until, and it always seemed like, okay, you know, once I have a baby, like my life's going to magically change and I'm going to turn into this like, you know, sweet little PTA mom all of a sudden, just kind of like by proxy of having given birth, I would become this new person.
The mirror turns into a cradle and you just slap some bunny rabbit, you know, stickers on the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
You're cool with it.
Yeah.
So that's what you thought was going to happen. You know, it's kind of like, but this is what we do. And when we're in our addiction, we can't see it. Even in recovery, we kind of can't see it that way. I had a guy in here, Michael Page, he played with Iggy Pop, and he goes, you know, Iggy would never allow drugs. I go, oh, so you're just drinking a weed? He goes, and cocaine. I go, whoa, dude. So, you know, the point being that they didn't even classify cocaine as a drug back then.
Yeah.
And even them, he's like, I don't know, he's over 60, it hit him like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it is. It's crazy. And then, you know, you surround yourself with people who are kind of in that same headspace and kind of will co-sign your BS, you know?
I get it. I thought it was so romantic when I got my second DUI, had to go through the loop. I had to go through the loop.
Uh-huh. What's the loop? I don't even know what
this is. They process you like you're going to be arrested.
Okay.
But then they send you home for house arrest.
Okay.
And the girl picked me up, and she had a pipe full of speed, and I was like, oh, that is what love is all about, girl. Take care of your man. Oh, man.
Oh, my
gosh.
It
was disgusting. I want to vomit right now. But anyhow. So you're happily
married.
But it's
not crazy. I get it. Yeah.
You get it.
I get it because I literally, yeah, I mean, I remember literally ODing and having to be brought back to life.
I'm not laughing at the OD, something else.
My solution was I was really super tired from that whole situation. So I'm going to do different kinds of drugs to bring me the different way.
So wait, so the reason I chuckled is I was imagining you two in the doorway of the white room, arm in arm going, look at our cute little white room.
I don't know.
But so tell me, how do we get to ODing? What was going on then? How long after you were married? You're doing tons of Xannies. You got some doctors.
Pills and then, you know, the pain pills too a little bit. Just whatever I could get. And
Some
Demerol,
opiates.
Like,
why mess around?
Just jump right into whatever I could get, you know. But that's what...
Well, and your dude had money, which means access, and you're in a good circle. You're not in the alley.
No.
So when you're in the good circle with money, the doctors come in and
it was never a problem. And also, I mean, I had a BA in psychology. I could kind of talk the talk of what I needed to say to get prescribed what I wanted to get prescribed.
So before you OD, what's your life like? Because a minute ago you said you partied on the weekends.
Yeah.
And what were you doing? Now you're drinking, you're doing weed. Xanax is kind of just a regular thing.
Yeah.
You're taking some Demerol.
Yeah.
Are you starting to have blackouts? Are you doing embarrassing things?
Oh, yeah.
Like what? Let's talk about what's one of the darkest, most hideous things ever, and we want details.
And you want me to say it on the radio?
Well, you don't. Honestly, I don't want you to hurt yourself.
Here's the thing.
I'm kind of joking, but what was it?
A lot of the things that, really still haunt me aren't even, the things that are, on the surface, oh, haha, that's embarrassing. It was, the times that I didn't show up for the family thing or for the thing that was really important or the friend's wedding or those kind of things.
Because you're too loaded on a run.
Too loaded, too hungover, whatever it is. I always had a lie. I always had a reason.
I did the same thing. And I've talked about it. You know, my mom, who I was very close to, when I got really bad in my meth addiction, had breast cancer. And I was hiding. I couldn't even go visit her. So that's one of the most painful things, you know?
Yeah, just same. I remember, God, my dad had heart surgery. And, it's hard because, I really wanted to be there for him.
Yeah.
And, so I showed up. I flew back to Iowa, but I couldn't feel my feelings. You know, I was running from my feelings. So
exactly.
I showed up at his bedside all messed up after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get that. And, you know, we talk about this in addiction. It's the powerlessness. And some people are like, why don't you just use your willpower?
Yeah.
When you're not there for your family that you love dearly, you would be. You have the intention to be. I remember many times, I'll be at that party tomorrow night. And you miss it.
Yeah.
And that's the powerlessness that we come to believe that it's true for us, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many things that were so important to me, I really sabotaged. And
right.
I think on some level, my disease wanted to do that. It wanted to sabotage the good stuff.
Well, don't you think it's because you didn't have the power to stop or moderate so you could show up for stuff?
Oh, yeah. It always started with good intentions.
Right.
You know, I'm just going to have one or whatever it was going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was trying to lay off the stuff, I woke up at 5 in the morning because I went to bed so early. I was on a health kick.
Mm-hmm.
And this girl calls me. She's like, hey, what are you doing? She's been up all night.
Okay.
And I had to go to my stepdad's party. He might be listening, which I'm sorry, but this is... And I was like, well, it's 5 in the morning. Yeah. I just slept. I can go have a couple drinks and we'll do a little cocaine and I'll just make the party. That does not go well.
No.
You're going to start doing cocaine at 6 in the morning and drinking and then go to a birthday party.
No.
At midday.
Right.
Right? Yeah. That's what we do.
But we tell ourselves it might happen this one time.
We think we're going to pull it off.
Yeah.
Right? We're just going to dip our toe in the pool.
Yeah.
So how were you feeling? Were you starting to get a lot of shame and guilt?
Absolutely. So much shame and guilt. Yeah. Like all the time.
And you just had to suppress it? Wait, did you know you were trying to stuff it down, or you just what?
I don't know if I did. I think that I had those moments of clarity, you know, that we have. And a lot of times they're like a Monday morning and like a, you know, you get that moment of clarity and you're going to change your life and you're going to do the thing and you maybe take those initial steps, but there's no real follow through, you know, come Thursday, come Friday, it's all changed. Yeah.
Right. So we try, we're like, okay, I'm not doing that again.
Right. Of course, you know, you swear it off and you're never going to do that again and you beat yourself up and all that.
So, yeah, you think you're going to control and enjoy your using, right?
Exactly.
I can still enjoy it. I just need to not do so much of this and not do those knucklehead things.
Yeah, I come up with these weird plans of, like, you know, if I don't have the white wine, then, you know, it's like the color of the wine. And,
right,
you know.
It's not the Demerol, the cocaine, and the Xanax. It's the color of the wine.
It's the color of the wine. It's the color of the grapes that have been pressed, yeah.
So what I like to do is sometimes pertain these specific stories to people in a more general way. Because we talk about this in recovery.
Yeah.
There's a story in one of the recovery literature books. But it talks about how we have this logical thought that will get us loaded again.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense to us at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people can have all different versions of it. You know, I'm just going to sell cocaine. I'm not going to do any.
Uh-huh.
And truly believe that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we do that all the time, right? Yeah. Okay, I'm not the white wine. I get it. So now you're kind of trying to make some changes.
Yeah.
When did you finally have success? What was your bottom? What was the bottom, the dark moment that made you?
You know, I had a lot of dark moments. And they became so much more serious after I became a mom, because then there's this other little person involved.
Sorry, you had a child.
I had a kid.
And it didn't stop. Nothing changed.
Well, you know, I stopped using, and I stopped
during
using the pills during the pregnancy. And then after, like, I legitimately had, like, a lot of issues with postpartum and postpartum depression. Yeah.
Did you get on psych meds?
Yeah.
Well, you were a psychologist or BA in psychology.
Yeah. You know, I had like I'd always been like an anxious person and kind of run that way, but I had so much anxiety after I had my daughter to the point where I couldn't leave my house.
Mm.
I wasn't able to eat when my husband wasn't around because I was afraid I was going to choke and die. I mean, it was just, you know, these crazy thoughts, but my hormones were all whacked out, and that's what happened. So ended up going to the doctor and was given a script once again for benzos. And maybe there was like a legitimate need there, but I caught on real fast that if you say that you have a 3-month-old and you're having postpartum issues, that they'll give you a script, no questions asked. So, you know, I ended up with a big prescription to it and kind of this justification in my head that I needed it.
Right.
You know, that it was legitimate. It was really from a doctor.
The doctor thinks you need it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was medication, and just went really downhill really, really fast when I got on that. It was also having like the mental stuff or the hormonal stuff or whatever it was, you know, because I started using so much more regularly. Like,
how much?
I was prescribed 3 milligrams a day, which is a pretty hefty dose.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get a little bit extra from, you know, different places. Yeah. And I would take it not as prescribed. So I'd know to like kind of front load it all at the beginning of the day. And I'd always have like this plan on how many I was going to take each day so I could get through the month. But I'd usually get through that by like day 17 or so and have to call and be like, yeah, I lost it. Or
fell in the toilet.
My friend stole it or whatever it was, you know. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. So you didn't use during the pregnancy and afterwards. Did you have any period of not using afterwards?
Yeah, a little while. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get all crazy.
And then I get all crazy. And I'm taking all this medication and I'm kind of not sure what's up from down from, you know, the postpartum and what I need and what I don't. And Then I start combining it with like the alcohol because I'm having like some kind of gnarly mental stuff going on.
And how's your husband in all this? Does he know? Does he care? Is he catching on? Is he you should chill out?
He knows. And he was a really good guy that didn't understand addiction. He just really did it. And so, you know, in to be helpful, it was like, okay, let's lock the pills in the safe and give her them, you know, in these doses, or let's hide the wine, or let's monitor the wine, or let's give her a certain amount. You know, it was all these like ways to help and control it.
Which I get, but it's kind of insane when you know better, like we do, because we've been doing this a while.
Right. Yeah, when you know. But if you don't know, you don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
So what was the bottom? What made it so you could change?
Yeah, so there was like a lot of bottoms that were worse than what the final straw was. But the final straw was I got back from, well, it's kind of crazy to say, it was actually like a little yoga retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter had really, really missed me. This is when she was like probably 3.
Yeah.
She'd really, really missed me.
So now you're married, you're kind of out of the Hefner scene, you're being a mom and becoming a yoga nini.
Yogini. Yeah, was separated from my husband at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. And then after that, kind of my using got kind of worse because it was like dealing with that too. And all of a sudden I had this time away from my daughter, which was really hard for me.
Yeah. You came home. She missed you a lot.
She missed me a lot. And I was just too messed up that next day to see her. And I started drinking that morning. I couldn't see her that day.
You could not drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your heart wanted to hang with your daughter, probably.
Oh, so
but the
badly.
Disease was like, you need a drink, girl.
Yeah.
That yoga was hard.
No. I'd been like, you know, drinking and using all weekend.
Even in yoga training?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not weird for people like us, but
It's weird,
probably a small percentage.
Yeah, because I tried to go on those things, because I was like, well, that's a healthy thing to do. You know, that'll
thinking
be...
that'll cure it.
Yeah.
And that's in the literature, too, right? Yeah. We go away to health farms, it says that
health farms and sanitariums. I've been to both,
So, okay, we're going to throw in the song right now.
Okay.
We got to give ourselves some time to talk about the bottom, how'd you got out, and what life's like now.
Yeah.
The radness. We don't want to stay too much in the mess, because you're a rad woman.
Oh,
thanks. So we can give ourselves time. So, what's the next song? It's the Eagles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
You don't remember what you picked? I don't.
Take it easy, maybe?
Peaceful, easy feeling.
Yeah, that's a good one. Peaceful, easy feeling.
We're not right there in your story, but hey.
It's coming. It's coming, baby.
Know that it is. So, Wes Geer, Rock Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. We're here with Lindsay Christensen. This is Eagles, Peaceful, Easy Feeling. Did I say that right? We'll be right back.
I like the way your sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown, and I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a billion stars all around, cause I got a peaceful, easy feeling, and I know you won't let me down, cause I'm already standing on the ground. And I found out a long time ago what a woman can do to your soul. She can't take you anyway. You don't already know how to go. And I got a peaceful, easy feeling. And I know you won't let me down. Cause I'm already standing on the ground.
Yeah. Aren't the Eagles rad?
So rad.
They're so rad.
They just give me that peaceful, easy feeling.
They do.
They do. They really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Very soothing. So, Wes Geer here, your host on Rock to Recovery Radio. We're back on KX93.5 FM, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. I'm here with Lindsay Christensen, who's a yogini.
Uh-huh.
Former just sexy chick doing all those sexy girl things.
There you
and
go.
And acting.
Yeah.
And acting. Yeah. Let's not just, you know, oversimplify it. You had some talent. Who's also got a BA in psychology. What?
What?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I got brains. We're talking about how your life was pretty normal. You felt uncomfortable when you're young. You realize that when you're a kindergartner. Then in high school, you know, you're getting some looks from the dudes because you're an attractive woman. But it wasn't too weird, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you went to Boulder, got your degree,
mm-hmm.
and decided, you know what, I'm juiced up in the brain category, but I'm going to go get some fame and fun in Hollywood and all that.
Yeah.
And that's when you did
excitement,
TV,
yeah.
game shows, yeah. commercials, mm-hmm. weird German-style Jimmy John commercials. And then you got married
uh-huh.
to a very successful rad dude, but he was also a partier.
Yep.
In your house, you were trying to make a baby, but you didn't have a baby room, but you had a white room that was made with a big mirror in it for cocaine.
Yeah.
You discovered benzos.
Yep.
Benzos really kicked your addiction
yeah.
up. That's
yeah,
what
yeah.
happened to me. I was a heavy
really?
Drinker, then I got meth, and then meth really just
oh, okay,
took it
yeah.
another level.
Yeah.
So, and then you had a kid,
mm-hmm.
your Cammy.
Yep.
Yeah. She's adorbs. And you thought that would help you clean up. You cleaned up during the pregnancy.
Yeah.
When you came out, you had bad postpartum.
Yeah.
Then you went to some doctors, and you knew you probably weren't. You needed them, but you
yeah.
needed to abusing them.
Yeah.
And now you're ODing. You're not showing up. You're, you know,
yeah.
you're miserable.
Yeah.
What about almost dying? We almost missed that part.
Oh, yeah. There were a couple times, you know, where I'd end up in the hospital where I just, whatever, overshoot the mark with the pills.
And just keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, so scary.
Just combine things in the wrong way.
Well, that many things, you know, benzos and Demerol and yeah.
And yeah, cocaine, alcohol, that stuff, yeah.
So you didn't die. You're trying
no.
to chill out. You're going,
yeah.
you're drinking and training to be a yogi,
a
yogini.
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, we talk so much about like consciousness and being in the moment.
Right.
But that was exactly what I was struggling with, which is what I think kind of attracted me to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what
and
I needed.
Said,
yeah.
And so the bottom wasn't like the near death stuff. It
no.
was when you came back, you're now yeah. separated from your husband.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that partying probably didn't help it.
No, it didn't
oh,
help it.
Funny,
all.
I call it
yeah.
partying. How about.
Yeah, because it wasn't really a party,
yeah,
was it? No.
Not anymore.
No.
And so you come back from the yogi training, and your daughter missed you terribly.
Yeah.
She's three. You know,
yeah.
kids get, they're like, it's like almost seems like trauma, right? Oh, I was
yeah.
my mommy. And then you couldn't even
yeah.
hang with her because you had to have a drink.
Yeah.
So you went to get help,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
what was the key? Like, how did you get out of that?
Well, I tried a couple things. You know, I tried like an outpatient program, and then I went to like a 28-day inpatient program. And then, you know, it sounds cliche to say, but, you know, our first step is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. It was literally just after fighting it for so long, after going through the programs, was just looking in the mirror on that Monday after I couldn't see my daughter. And, like, I did just freaking hated who I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't like what you saw.
I didn't like what I saw. And that wasn't me.
So you had some
you know?
Failed attempts through various programs.
Yeah. But it was just this one moment in time.
So it's like a moment of clarity.
Yeah.
And what'd
you
do?
I've heard that called like an emotional bottom.
Yeah.
Started
emotional
going,
bottom. Yeah.
Really, this time I just started going to meetings. You know, I started going to AA meetings, and I started showing up because I wanted to, not because I had to have something signed. And really making an honest attempt of it. You know, I got a sponsor. Started socializing with people in the program. I have great friends like you. So, you know, at the beginning, you're like, you're so worried about, well, what am I going to do? How am I going to socialize with my friends? Like, you know, I have a lot of the same friends, but I have this also really rad new group of friends that's, you know, people like you.
Thank you.
So I really made a lot of changes in my life, and it really was just starting to go to meetings. You know, those are, they're powerful. And, you know, I got the message of this is how we do it, and I started reading the big book, and started working with a sponsor and doing the things that she said to do and
taking direction.
It, yeah, taking
You're
direction.
Willing. Yeah.
Yeah. Putting my ego to the side and just saying like, hey, I don't have this. I don't know how to do this. I gotta put my hand out for help.
That's great. I remember hearing you say that at first, because you thought your problem was benzos, you didn't want to identify like as alcohol being the problem or alcoholic. But after a while, you gave up and you're like, no, this is me.
Well, yeah, because, you know, after I did, I quit the benzos. I quit all the drugs. But then I was like, well, you know, maybe I could have a little bit of wine with dinner or whatever it was, you know, and quickly found out that I couldn't drink like a normal person.
And you haven't. And here's something that people don't know at home. And this serendipitous stuff happens all the time in recovery. Today is what?
This is my 2-year
sobriety. Yeah,
my sober birthday.
Woo!
Thank you.
Yeah, isn't that rad?
Thank you.
Because I asked you to do the show.
I know.
And we're like, when's the date? And
right.
This and that. And then the date that was available, that you were available, is on your 2-year sobriety birthday.
Yeah.
That stuff, you can't make it up.
No, and because when you asked me to do the show, I was kind of hemming and hawing, and I was really nervous, not because I didn't want to do it, but you know, just I was nervous. And then, you know, that date was thrown out. I'm like, all right, that's, you know, that's a sign. Like, this is supposed to be. I'm supposed
to do this. That it landed on your 2-year. Yeah.
That's a sign.
Yeah. These things, you can't make them up. And I think the opposite happens. I swear people like me, and it sounds maybe like you, but when I get loaded, like the wheel falls off the car.
Yes.
It rains in July in Palm Springs.
Yes.
It's just weird things happen.
Yeah, there's
no
flow.
It's just everything. And then you get sober and things start lining up.
Yeah. You're not swimming upstream anymore. It's so much easier. You relax and take it easy. That's what they say, you know, and
relax,
it's so true. You get to relax and take it easy.
So what's the key to you getting to 2 years? Is it different from how it was in the beginning?
I want it.
You want it.
I do.
But are you doing anything different from the early days, weeks?
That I'm doing now than from the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my program's different now than it was right at the beginning. You know, right at the beginning, it was definitely like, get to a meeting every day. I still do a lot of the things every day. I don't necessarily go to a meeting every day. I go a few times a week. But I still, you know, I read the big book in the morning. That's big to me. I do
my
morning
routine.
Yeah, morning routine, morning meditation. You know, I pray a lot, and that's big for me.
Mm-hmm.
That step three, that connection with God, has been such a huge part of my program, and that was something I really struggled with at first.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a roadblock I saw, and it's actually been like it's been such a help. Like, it's something, you know, I don't feel like I have to do it alone, which has been cool.
What's the biggest gift of sobriety?
My feelings.
What about them?
I get to feel them, you know? I get to feel them.
Good or
and
bad.
There's good or bad, but there's so much good. There's like that love for my daughter, that not missing that moment, you know, that getting to be really there and really present and really in it.
How's it with other people? Do you like, you used to be uncomfortable? Do you feel more comfortable now?
Totally.
Crazy?
And I have so many close friends, and I don't feel alone anymore. I really don't. You know, I know so. It's funny, people who are in our program who are struggle with addiction, I identify with these people so much. And like, I'm so proud to say I'm an addict, I'm an alcoholic, because like, these are my people. You know, I found my family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time. There's more questions I want to ask, because I want to get into like what it's like to be sexy and sober. You know what I mean? I think that's a great topic. Maybe we'll have you back, because I thought you were awesome guest. Don't you guys think so? Oh my gosh, she was amazing. She was the best. But we got to bounce.
Bummer. Okay.
Happy 2 years.
Thanks
for coming down. You're incredible. Lindsay Christensen. Or on Instagram, Lindsay Christensen Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
She is a yogini, not to be confused with a yoganini.
Yoga teacher,
yep. Yoga teacher. You could catch her around Newport, San Clemente, Dana Point, maybe.
Yeah.
Teaching, yeah. Rad.
All those places.
Thanks for coming down. Rock Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. I'm your host, Wes Gear, and we are out.
Oh, yeah.